the hell am I to write this? I'm co-founder of a loved startup, but like not the biggest company in the world. I've never studied economics. Like, who am I to do this? So when my wife told me, find your way,
I have no idea where I am.
I had this flash of,
I better find help.
I'm going to grow a mustache.
Arthur, a mustache!
You know, when I look in the mirror and I see my face, I see like, the guy Yancey who thinks about everybody, always thinks of others first. But the person who writes this book doesn't care what anyone else thinks of them. And it was just so clear to me, the person who writes this book has a mustache. And I needed to step into that character. I needed to step into that character because I needed to change who I was so I could write this the way it needed to be written. Every time I looked in the mirror and saw myself, there was a moment of, who is that? And in that question, there was an opportunity. I got to choose. And eventually, my answer became, I'm the motherfucker that doesn't care.
Yancey Strickler has used role-playing techniques to create different characters of himself, characters that he's cleverly alternated throughout his life. And they all come with their own traits and skills and magic spells. Apart from good guy Yancey and the very recent motherfucker that doesn't care, Yancey's also the savvy entrepreneur that co-created Kickstarter. This is the story of a kid with a great imagination who always dreamed about becoming a writer. And along the way, created the most remarkable crowdfunding platform in the world, using his imagination and role-playing as a fascinating tool to discover the hidden possibilities that life has to offer. I'm Niklas Jansen, co-founder of Blinkist, and this is State of Mind. Join me on discovering some of the most fascinating and accomplished people in the world. We'll explore how their amazing skills, their attitudes, their habits and victories are product of their state of mind. Listening to Yancey's story, it's so interesting how this eloquent guy has applied role-playing in many crucial moments of his life. To learn more about role-playing, we talked to Gabe Zickerman, an expert on how you can use game dynamics in real life.
It's not unusual to imagine somebody getting into a role-playing situation in order to be able to explore the dynamic aspects of what it is that's on the other side of that experience. That is a core way that people have figured out what they like since the beginning of humanity. And it speaks to one of the interesting things about using gamification to change your behavior and change your outlook, which is that, like, in most cases, gamified systems are just tapping into really core, intrinsic aspects of human desire.
Here's Yancey again, talking about his role-playing process.
So where I'd wake up that morning, I'd imagine, okay, I'm a newspaper columnist. I'm waking up, I'm pitching my ideas, and I literally would spend an entire day just trying to, like, let me just try to imagine everything about this. And just that way so I could, in my body, feel what was real. And it starts with the belief that, like, I have to fool myself. Something very foolish. I have to trick myself into understanding what I really want. Because there are many things in between myself and what I will see or I will act on. And so, like, it's all about how do you remove as many of those filters as possible.
Gabe Zickerman helped us to understand that pretend playing was not just a recreational pastime for children, but a topic that has been carefully studied, especially in recent years, with the appearance of the concept of gamification. We asked Yancey if we could talk to somebody who may tell us a bit more about him and how he discovered role-playing at an early age. So he said, sure, why don't you talk to my mother? This is Margie, Yancey's mother.
He liked to play outdoors a lot because there wasn't a lot to do.
they had to use their imagination, make up stories, play out in the woods.
I grew up on a farm in Appalachia, Southwest Virginia. So Appalachia is, you know, like where bluegrass music, country music comes from. My father's a musician and a traveling waterbed salesman while I was growing up. My mom was a secretary at a college. Yeah, and it was a very conservative area. I grew up evangelical Christian.
Yancey loved reading books, if only for a short while. It gave him the possibility to escape the old farmhouse and discover the world that he hadn't yet seen, what he was sure he would eventually get to experience.
He was an avid reader. From the third grade, when he was about 8 years old, he wanted to be a writer. He wrote a lot of stories, imaginative stories. And one little thing I have that I think is so cute is it was written on a piece of cardboard. And he said, "Mom, I'm leaving. I don't like what we're having for dinner." And he said, "Tell my teacher I'm gone."
I always loved reading. Always loved books. That was like when I lived on this farm, we didn't have neighbors. And so I just read all the time and discovered the world through that. Books are a place of safety and an exploration and a place where what other people think of them is irrelevant. And so, like, that's such a precious zone to be in.
Yancey was bored of the Appalachian landscapes. He was way more excited about the incredible fantasy stories from his favorite authors. He loved traveling to unknown battlefields and faraway galaxies.
Enjoy the ride, pal.
Imagining heroic characters set out to save the world. Through books, Yancey discovered that he wanted to become a writer himself. And the first story he would ever write was the story of him leaving home.
Early on in my life, success was solely defined by going somewhere else. I didn't know where that would be, but, you know, if anyone's from a small place, you know that that's it. It's about getting out.
Get the hell on out of here.
So that was, like, what really drove me. I moved to New York City in 2000, and I moved with, like, 72 hours notice. A friend from high school called to say he got in a house in New York and they had an extra bedroom, aka they needed someone to come pay money so they could get this place. But I had to be there in 3 days, and said yes. And it was like the bravest decision I'd ever made in my life up until that point. And I moved to New York really without having a plan.
So this is how a kid from Virginia packed his things and just $2,000 in savings to arrive at an apartment in Brooklyn. And just like that, Yancey put on the skin of a New Yorker.
Taxi! Taxi!
I could feel that it was a moment to step up. You know, I could feel that I was scared. But I liked that, like, I had to make a decision at that second. But I made a quick commitment that was definitely life-changing. And, you know, arriving in New York, living in New York was amazing. That was everything.
It was the beginning of the millennium.
Now on the eve of a new year and of a new century.
The Yankees had just won the World Series. The Y2K had almost caused the end of the world.
Back on the Y2K front.
It was probably a very exciting time to be in New York. And so, following his dream, Yancey worked as a writer for different media outlets.
I faxed a resume and I got a job rewriting news stories into 70-word blurbs that would appear on radio stations' websites or that DJs would read out on air. My focus was on modern rock and pop, also in hip-hop too. And so every day I would have to turn in about 10 stories of 70-word blurbs about news items involving those people.
The young writer started to think about why it was so hard to make it as an artist.
For me, as someone who loved music and loved books, I love underdogs, I love tiny bands. All that kind of art and culture is really hard to make because no one makes any money off of it. people are supporting things for stupid reasons. They're supporting them because they're just trying to fund profitable ideas, because they're all businesses. They're all for-profit businesses. And that's not why creative projects exist. So to me, the story of dominant culture was good ideas and good people contorting themselves to fit the needs of the mass channels and to fit those ideals and those expectations and those templates, and just feeling like that was a sellout and that was lame that people had to do that.
And as fate would have it, one night of 2005, he met a very particular guy, a skinny dude with long hair.
There's a place in Brooklyn called Diner, which is a really amazing, cool restaurant. And I was there all the time. And there's a guy that worked there. We became good friends. And this guy named Perry. And one day he told me he had this idea he wanted to share with me. And he had had the idea for Kickstarter and for crowdfunding. He wanted to throw a concert in New Orleans. He wanted to have Kruder and Dorfmeister come play in New Orleans. And it was going to take like $20,000. And there's no way he was going to put up that money, but he had this flash of, what if I could propose the idea for the concert on the internet? People would put up their credit cards, and they would only be charged if the show sold out.
On my credit card. I'm never going to pay it back anyway. Because I have $30,000 in credit card debt.
And that's a way that, like, the show could either happen or not happen, and I'm not having to make this decision based on whether or not I have $20,000 to spend on this. So he just had that flash, and that was a light bulb moment. And I think he shared it with me because where my job was, it had .com in its name, which made me like the most tech person I think he had encountered. But he told me about this idea, and he convinced me. And so he invited me to become a part of it.
So Yancey and Perry started working together on Kickstarter, an idea that took them 3 years to launch. It was a difficult endeavor, given that neither of them had ever started a company and they had no idea about software development.
What drove me is interesting, because what drove me was like having a secret life. I had a day job that I enjoyed. I loved my coworkers. Like, all that was cool. But to have my own project with a friend and, like, you know, just the thing that I would do after work and the things that we would do on weekends, it was just exciting. And it created a feeling of meaning in those parts of life. I had in other parts of life too, but we're just different. So it started with just like a fun thrill of that, and doing it with a friend, you know, was super fun. I had no desire to be an entrepreneur, but it just happened that this idea needed to be a company.
Yancey was having fun because he got to be somebody else. He had the chance to put on another skin and surprise himself of what he was capable of. And before he knew it, after 3 years of effort and hard work, Kickstarter was launched. After the break, Yancey discovers that changing the world is in fact a possibility.
If you're enjoying this episode of State of Mind, you'll probably also enjoy Blinkist. Blinkist is an app that jumpstarts your personal learning journey. You can listen to key ideas from nonfiction books and discover new perspectives with eye-opening shows just like this one. If you'd like to try Blinkist, go to Blinkist.com/SOM to start your free 7-day trial and get 25% off a Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/SOM to get 25% off and a free 7-day trial.
Excellent.
Blinkist.com/SOM.
About a year and a half ago, I started making these t-shirts, and I made a grand total of about 12 using a can of spray paint and this laser cut stencil. And what I want to do is I want to start making about, I don't know, 100 or so of these. So it's a limited run. And I want to get everything funded before I get started. So that's where I'm coming to you guys. So please jump in, and I'll make your t-shirts out here in my backyard. Put a nice American Apparel print on the ground, a nicer blank than this. Spray it up and mail it to you.
That was Perry, promoting Kickstarter's first ever project online, spray painted t-shirts that said, "Grace Jones doesn't give a fuck."
No man can turn down that.
The project was not very successful. But in a matter of weeks, more successful creative projects were uploaded to the site.
Tired of going through all this?
We'll send you a new earbud for only $20.
Radiant Light and Power.
Introducing Swanky.
Universal Lens Cap.
All night.
For every
first electrically heated ice cream scoop.
Kickstarter was born with the intention of leveraging funds all across the world for creative ideas that normally struggle to gather early funding. Horror movies, cooking books, straw-based microcontrolled toys for building robots, the world's first levitating light bulb, you name it. And while the site's main purpose was to raise funds for creative people, Kickstarter was more than just a site about money. It was a global community.
Like, I don't think of it as being a site about money, because there's no financial upside in Kickstarter. People putting money into a project, you don't get any money back. You get to be a part of it. You get a reward when it's done. So projects are being funded not because they are potentially good businesses, which is why everything in the world is funded today. They're funded just because the public thinks they're a good idea. And that's it. And so it significantly lowers the bar for, like, the need for existence. And that was the explicit driver early on.
The spirit of Kickstarter was never about maximizing profit. But Yancey was co-founder and eventually became CEO of a multi-million dollar company. So naturally, money played a big role.
Money is a tremendous tool and a necessary tool, and it extends the lifespans of people and companies. That makes it extremely powerful. A deficit of it will shrink the lifespans of people or companies. So, you know, I treat money with tremendous respect, right? You know, like, it's not a thing to be flippant about. We treat financial value as the rational value on which decisions should be made today. However, I believe that this is not the only rational value. It's simply the first one. It's simply the first one that we've defined. I would go back to starting maybe with being a co-founder of something that made a ripple. You know, I was brought up believing that the world is orderly and that history is logical and that things fit where they're supposed to. And I guess I'd kind of imagined there were just like these steering committees everywhere sort of deciding how things worked. And maybe that was true for some periods of time. But with Kickstarter, I was really shocked by this understanding that Perry had this idea that we together had made it, had just like created this thing out of nothing. And then suddenly other people were believing in this thing. And as a result of their belief, it was real. And it like cast this ripple in all these ways. And that like just never stopped blowing my mind. And I felt like I was shown something that I couldn't unsee. And the sense of the world being more delicate than I thought just became this quite powerful feeling. And I can remember when I was first really becoming aware of those feelings, I felt like, you know, I felt like I was almost levitating off the ground or something, just seeing something in such a different way than my brain had really engaged with it before.
Through Kickstarter, Yancey's way of understanding the world was fractured, in a good way. He realized that by believing in something, it could actually become a reality, that the world was not an unchangeable construct. By dreaming up an idea and creating Kickstarter, they changed the world forever, proving that changing the world was in fact a possibility. But eventually, Yancey left Kickstarter.
When I stepped down as Kickstarter CEO 2 years ago, I wasn't sure what I was going to do exactly. And so I had 2 weeks that I spent brainstorming and thinking about what the future of me would be. And I decided the way to do that would be to treat myself as like I'm Yancey Inc., like I'm a company. And I have to plan my resources. You know, I have to strategize the next 2 years of thinking about how my energy should be used. So I ended up going through this process for about 2 weeks of journaling and writing and doing these different models. And then I came up with 5 options that I thought about as like where my energy should go.
Yancey had lived a great part of his life playing the role of good guy Yancey. And after building Kickstarter from scratch, he had leveled up his character as savvy entrepreneur Yancey. But now he figured that after stepping down as CEO, he would explore all different kinds of Yanceys.
And then I spent a day living inside of each of those possibilities.
And eventually he accepted the undeniable truth that what he really wanted to do since he was a kid was becoming Ryder Yancey. And for that, just like Paul McCartney, he had to grow a mustache.
mind had this immediate flash to this book I'd read a few months before called Beatles 1966. And it's this book is like a monthly diary, weekly diary of everything the Beatles did for 1 year.
They really don't realize that what these people are talking about is something that they really want themselves.
And they went on vacation for the only time in their career that year, too.
We meant more to kids than Jesus did.
So they took like a six-week vacation, and they all went their separate ways.
We were involved in a hell of a lot of things.
I just like being in the Beatles.
And so on Paul's vacation, Paul wanted to drive across France, Spain, and parts of Africa by himself. And so to do it, he slicked his hair back and he grew a mustache so he could be in disguise. And when he got back to London, he calls the other Beatles and he tells them, here's this amazing thing, I wasn't Paul, and we can't make another Beatles record. We all need to be somebody else. And this was the idea for Sgt. Pepper's.
Becoming writer Yancey opened a whole can of worms, which eventually created a mustache version he himself called The Motherfucker Who Doesn't Care. Even though the idea for the book probably came from good guy Yancey, it demanded a tougher version of himself to write it.
It was incredibly empowering, and it allowed me to step into this the way I needed to, and I do not believe I could have written it without it.
The result of that process is his new book, This Could Be Our Future, a manifesto for a more generous world.
The thesis of the book is that the world today is dominated by a belief that I call financial maximization. And this is the implicit belief, the hidden default, that the correct rational choice in every decision is the option that makes the most money. And this is the assumption that guides most of the world.
The same way Yancey had believed in the idea of Kickstarter and then made it a reality, he dreamed up a better, more generous world, and he walked in it. And then, with a mustache in the middle of his face, he wrote down what he had seen, putting it into a manifesto for the whole world to see and believe in.
The ultimate argument of the book is that it is absolutely within our power to define at least one new rational value by 2050. And so the book is ultimately an argument to millennial and Generation Y and Generation Z who will be in power for the first time in 2050, that rather than my generation who just assumed we could go with the flow and everything would work out, that they should have a plan for where they want us to be. Ultimately, our future is in the definition of new understandings of rational value. And that, I believe, is the path from where we are now that isn't just about burning it all down. If I believe that we are largely limited by lack of knowledge, then the question to ask is, well, what new forms of knowledge might present to us a path forward? What might we discover that would allow us to fundamentally change how we make decisions, for example? What is the path from here that is a positive, constructive path that takes us where we need to go?
Here's Gabe Zickerman again, our gamification expert.
One of the most characteristic things about games is that they have become extraordinary training tools. They're better than ever at teaching people how to do something. And it bears noting that people have used games to improve their lives for a very long time.
Yancey has tried out different roles, different hats, and even a mustache, in order to discover all sorts of opportunities. And he was able to unleash his full potential as an entrepreneur and as a writer. And along the way, with a bit of imagination, he was able to change the world.
The beauty of that is that you're learning what you're capable of. You know, you're learning what you can grow into. You're learning from the gut about what feels right to you. And those are all things that change. You know, my answer when I did this process is probably different than what it would be now, even though I'm the same person, right? So make it fun. Make it role-playing. Like, there's no reason why we have to wake up and be the same person every day.
Next time on State of Mind. The amazing story of Steffi Cohen and how she became the strongest female powerlifter in history.
Getting to the top is easy, but staying at the top is what's really hard.
And about how she became the best by quitting over and over again.
I think quitting in some situations is extremely smart and extremely necessary. If I'm not trying to be the best at something, if I'm not trying to improve, then I might as well be dead.
New episodes of State of Mind airing every Wednesday. State of Mind is a production of Invisible Media and Blinkist. If you like what we're doing here, please take a moment and support us by subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. State of Mind is executive produced by Ignacio Kalek and Alexander Bartole. State of Mind is also written by Alexander. This episode was edited by Daniel Manrique. The writing was supported by Juan Urgel. Sound recording and promos by Elias Gonzalez. Music direction, sound design, and mixing by Rafael Giner. The State of Mind theme was also composed and produced by Rafael. Additional music and sound effects, courtesy of our friends at Epidemic Sound. Check them out, they have really nice stuff there. Thank you, Yancy Strickler, for taking the time to talk to us. Also, big thank you to our gamification expert, Gabe Zickerman, and a huge thank you to Yancy's mother, Marchie Strickler. Also, thank you to our gamification expert, Yu-Kai Chu, and venture capitalist, Albert Wenker. Their interviews helped us to understand the bigger picture. Unfortunately, they didn't make it into the final episode. Special thanks to Thomas Hasch, Christian Persico, Gustavo Arenz, Ivan Iglesias, Alejandro Hernandez-Rodriguez, Mathilde Barbo, Jana Lederbiel, Stephanie Siegmund, and Philipp Hoffmann. Got Instagram? Follow Invisible Media for the latest news and a behind-the-scenes look at the making of the show. The handle is @TheInvisibleMedia. There's one more thing. Check out Yancy's new book, This Could Be Our Future, A Manifesto for a More Generous World. It's a really inspiring book. I'm Niklas Janssen, your host, and this is State of Mind.